I did some Googles that I would like to share with you guys. So, Rob, if you can you pull up the odds for Seth Lugo and the Cy Young? Because I don't think that we have given it enough conversation. I don't think it has been top of mind enough that the Royals currently have a pitcher who should be the favorite for the American League Cy Young. Let me give you some stats to back up my point. So Seth Lugo right now is 11-2 with a 2.17 ERA. We have seen 18 Seth Lugo starts. So I did a very simple Google search, and I went back to the last time that a Royals pitcher won the Cy Young, which was Zach Greinke in 2009. Now, those of you that are old enough to remember this, you remember how dominant Zach Greinke was in 2009. He started the All-Star game. Zach Greinke was amazing. Rob, do you remember the Sports Illustrated cover and Zach Greinke was on there and it called him the best pitcher in the world? That was in 2009. Joe Posnanski wrote the article. So through the first 18 starts for Zach Greinke, who was the American League Cy Young Award winner that year, he had given up 116 hits through the first 18 starts, 30 earned runs, 129 strikeouts, and had a 2.12 ERA. So really, really good, obviously. Let me give you what Seth Lugo has done through the same amount of time of 18 starts. He has given up 93 hits, 28 earned runs, and has a 2.17 ERA so far. Seth Lugo has been better than Zach Greinke was in 2009 when he won Cy Young. And I remember back in 2009, you knew every single time Zach Greinke was out there, Grinky's about to put on a show. Like, is absolutely going to put on a show. Now, Seth Lugo, I don't think is Zach Greinke. Like, I don't think he's that. I think Zach Greinke's going into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. But you could maybe argue that was Zach Greinke's best year. And Seth Lugo has been equal to him in almost, or better, in almost every pitching statistic that really, really matters for a pitcher. I don't think we are talking about it nearly enough. Seth Lugo should be at the top of the list, or at least top three, if we are talking about who is a favorite to win the American League Cy Young. He has been incredible. I remember there was a time where you and I was debating on who the All-Stars were going to be. I think we can go ahead and mark them in for a for sure three. I don't know if they get to the fourth All-Star, but Salvador Perez is going to make it. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to make it. Bobby Witt's going to be on the show tomorrow at 2:25. So there's two guaranteed All-Stars, and I just don't know how you can announce the American League All-Star team and not include Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo has pitched the most innings, he has the most wins, and he has the lowest ERA of any starting pitcher in the American League. He has to be in there, and maybe not past that. He should possibly be the starter for the American League in the All-Star game.
So I pulled up the numbers because you asked. Currently, on our friends at FanDuel, Seth Lugo has the sixth best odds to win the Cy Young. Seth Lugo is plus 1,900 to win the Cy Young.
Which makes it seem like he doesn't really have a realistic shot of winning it.
I mean, it doesn't seem, I mean, there are definitely...
I mean, plus 1,900, I mean, 19-1 odds. That, I mean, that's a long shot to win the award. When just based on his numbers, he should not be a long shot to win the award.
To give you context to even further it, Tarek Skubal, who is the starter for the Tigers, who a lot of people think is going to win the award, is plus 190 right now. Meanwhile, Seth Lugo, who leads the AL in every category you just indicated, which would be better than Tarek Skubal because AL to AL, is plus 1,900. I don't know if it's lack of name cachet. I don't know if it's where he plays. I don't know if it's because they want a top prospect. I don't know if it's because the betting markets feel like there's no way this can continue. But those numbers indicate that at least Vegas or FanDuel or DraftKings, whatever your sports book is, do not believe that Seth Lugo has any chance. I mean, he's got the sixth worst odds. Like, people have won from that position, but at the halfway point, to be that deep and leading in all categories doesn't seem to add up to me.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the stats side by side. He has more quality starts. He has a lower ERA. he has more wins. I know that doesn't necessarily matter all the time with pitchers, but you have more quality starts, a lower ERA, you have more wins, you have pitched significantly more innings. Scooble is at 97 innings. Seth Lugo is at 116 innings, so you have been a more available, the healthier pitcher out of the two. What's the argument for that guy being the overwhelming favorite to win the award and Seth Lugo is a long shot? You're telling me that guy is a 2-1 favorite to win it and Seth Lugo is a 19-1 favorite to win it. That doesn't make sense to me when looking at the numbers.
And I'm pulling the numbers here too to make sure I'm seeing them correctly. Like, listen, I know that wins and all those things aren't the end-all be-all, but Scooble doesn't even lead the AL in strikeouts. Like, he doesn't lead, like, there are tons and tons of stats that would point toward Seth Lugo. Now, I didn't pull up the advanced metrics. I didn't pull up war. I didn't pull up all these stats that are, you know, saber-based and obviously important. I'm not denying their value, but, you know, and voters do tend to look at a lot of more saber stats than they do 10, 15 years ago. Honestly, you mentioned that Zach Greinke Cy Young year. Mm-hmm. That was one of the years people thought was part of the saber revolution because he's an under 500 win-loss record. But, I mean, ERA alone, he's better than Tarek Skubal. Like, Skubal is a great player. Do not get me wrong. But I don't understand how you can just have him as the far and away betting favorite over Seth Lugo. Now, I do. So someone text lines like, you guys are just casuals. I don't think Scooble's a bad pitcher. If Scooble won, I wouldn't be upset. Don't get me wrong. But to have him as the far and away betting favorite based on the stats the way they are now is kind of crazy to me.
I'm with you. It's just not really adding up. I mean, again, if you look at what Zach Greinke did in 2009, the last Royals player to do it, Seth Lugo is off to a better start than Zach Greinke was the year that he won the American League Cy Young. He's off to a better start than he was. Seth Lugo has been incredible.
By the way, someone in the text line goes, what are the strikeout numbers? Scooble has seven more strikeouts than Seth Lugo.
It's close.
It's negligible.
Right there. It's right there. It doesn't make any sense. Seth Lugo has been... I mean, this offseason, we knew that the Royals needed to invest in starting pitching. We knew that they needed to go out there and spend money. That is exactly what they've done. I mean, the Royals have really done something in the last year that if you have been following this organization for some time, you haven't really seen a lot of. They made the exact right free agent moves when it came to starting pitching. They also have helped develop their own starting pitching. That has kind of always been the Achilles heel of the Royals as an organization. And you remember, after the run had ended, Dayton had a strategy. Hey, this is what we want to do to improve this. His way didn't really work. J.J. Piccolo, I think, has shown you in a pretty short period of time, hey, I can build a rotation. He made the trade to go get Cole Reagans. He went out and got Seth Lugo in free agency. He went out and got Michael Wacha in free agency. He has built one of the better starting rotations for the Royals that I can remember. And there's no better pitcher that they have currently on their team than Seth Lugo. He has had an incredible year. He's going to be an all-star this season.
You mentioned Dayton's philosophy versus J.J. Piccolo. I've said this before on the show, but I want to continue to hammer it home. I will continue, no matter how this season ends, to credit J.J. Piccolo. What was the, albeit very annoying, thing that we kept hearing about last year's team when they were getting their teeth kicked in every night? Evaluation season. We're just evaluating. All we're doing is evaluating. And that was annoying as a Royals fan because our whole lives we've been told it's rebuilding, evaluating. We're just trying to figure things out. You know what J.J. Piccolo did after 1 year as GM, after evaluating one season of the roster? He went, okay, here are the guys who can play, and I am fixing the rest. And we haven't seen that from a GM. Even Dayton, when he built the World Series team, he built it slowly. It took waves. There was Hosmer came up, then Moose came up, and then Kane came through, and then Escobar started playing well, and then Duffy started playing better, and then the bullpen started coming together. It was a slow go for that build. J.J. Piccolo saw one of the worst seasons in Royals baseball last year. He evaluated it the same way everyone else did. Stinky. That was trash. And you know what he did? He said, okay, I don't have any pitchers. He traded for Cole Reagans. He signed Seth Lugo. He signed Michael Wacha. And he made Brady Singer, who at one point was a sacred cow in this organization, compete. And you've seen the best because of it. He made some minor tweak moves, you know, some moves we don't talk about in the air, some, you know, waiver trades and things, because he thought the bullpen arms we have in the minors stink. And he added, albeit not a good bullpen, a lot better this year than last year. Hunter Renfro may not have worked out, but he saw a glaring hole in right field and went, I got to get a person out there. I got to get a physical body. He has, to his credit, taken the results of the evaluation series, and evaluated correctly, and that's why the Royals are winning.
Coming up on the other side, seeing Klay Thompson leave Golden State and join the Dallas Mavericks got me thinking about the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, the only place in Kansas City that gives you a random Royals lineup.
Baseball with the Royals.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck. Remember, Mike's got this. 610 Sports Radio.
I don't want to spend too much time talking about the basketball component of this opinion, but Klay Thompson is no longer on the Golden State Warriors. He is soon to join the Dallas Mavericks. Now, they're trying to figure out some behind-the-scenes basketball sign and trade. You guys don't care too much about this, but Klay Thompson has played, I believe this is year 11 in Golden State. They've won a championship in four of those years. He's had a great career at Golden State. He is no longer on the team, though. He is out of here. So it got me thinking a couple of things. I guess the first thing it got me thinking about is, I think what we saw Travis Kelce do a couple of weeks ago is Travis Kelce ensured that he will never be Klay Thompson. If you've been following the NBA, you've kind of known for quite some time, hey, it's going to be really, really tough for Golden State to be able to keep all three of these individuals. Steph Curry is never going to play for another team, but you had to make a major decision about Draymond, and then the Klay Thompson decision was right around the corner. They made a decision on who they picked. They picked Steph Curry, they picked Draymond Green, and they chose not to pick Klay Thompson. Klay did not get some crazy contract by NBA standards. I just think Golden State realized, hey, this same big three, it's not going to work anymore. We want to win a championship, so we got to go in a different direction. And they seem fine to let Klay Thompson walk out of the door and go play for another team. Now, Rob, I would say in this same context, I think it's different because it's football, but I think you guys follow what I'm about to say. The Chiefs have their own big three. They have Patrick Mahomes, they have Travis Kelce, and they have Chris Jones. And right now, everybody is happy. Everybody's gotten paid. Everybody is locked into their deal. The Chiefs are not letting Patrick Mahomes go anywhere, obviously. I don't think they're also going to let Travis Kelce go anywhere. I think Kelce will retire before he goes to play for another team. But Rob, I'm also not sure if Chris Jones won't be Klay Thompson at some point. We do have to be realistic about the NFL and the way that this thing works. And not everybody gets to stay with the same team for the duration of their career. Some of your favorite players eventually left that organization and had to go play another year somewhere else. I don't think that player, at least not for the next 10 to 12 years, is going to be Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that player is going to be Travis Kelce. I think there's a chance, if you look at the way the contracts align themselves, that that player probably is Chris Jones. That Chris Jones goes somewhere else and he has his Dallas Mavericks year, so to speak. At somewhere in the next 3 years, Chris Jones, we thank him for everything he's done for Kansas City. You know that he's eventually going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but he plays his last couple of years with the New Orleans Saints. He plays his last couple of years with the Carolina Panthers before he signs that one-day contract to retire in Kansas City and come back. The same way that I don't think Steph is going anywhere, I don't think Patrick is going anywhere. I don't think Draymond is going anywhere. I think Draymond would retire before he goes to play for another team. I think that's Travis Kelce. I'm not so sure in this analogy of Chris Jones isn't Klay Thompson, and that the same way that Klay eventually had to leave and he is going to retire a Dallas Maverick, I think Chris Jones is probably going to be the one that ends up being the same. Everybody's not staying on the team. Eventually, you had to let Vince Wilfork go. Eventually, Ty Law had to go play with somebody else. You think about the great Patriots players over the course of the last 15, 20 years. It is not many of them that only wore the same uniform. The Chiefs will not be much different. Some of their guys that you love and they're your favorite player, eventually they're going to have to go play for another team because that's the way the sports works.
And honestly, to continue your comparison between the Chiefs and the Golden State Warriors, we were talking in the back office, and I don't mean to get in the nitty-gritty of what the Warriors are. Their roster stinks. Anyone know why their roster stinks? their GM, who's now on ESPN, by the way, and their ownership group decide, let's just keep running it back with the same group and hoping for the same results. And eventually, the same results stopped. They won that title over the Celtics, and then since then, it's been mediocrity in Golden State. Father Time is catching up. Steph Curry's a little older. Draymond Green's a little older. Klay Thompson's a little older. Injuries, wear and tear, and the role players around them weren't good, weren't up to snuff, the whole deal. I hope, to your Golden State Kansas City analogy, Brett Veach doesn't have the same thought process with the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, Steph Curry is your Patrick Mahomes. He's never playing for their franchise unless it is abundantly clear it's over. But you got to always be rehabbing and refreshing and influencing the roster around him. And just because a guy might go in the Ring of Honor one day, or it's a guy is a near Hall of Famer, Brett Veach needs to be out ahead so that the roster is always the best for Patrick Mahomes. He has done this the once. Now, he may have been pushed into it because of money, whatever. He was ahead of the curve on Tyreek Hill. But please don't end up like Bob Myers, Brett Veach, and the fact that you're saying, well, I got Klay, I got Steph, I got Draymond, I'm good. Eventually, you got to make moves so that you stay good, and those staying good moves sometimes hurt. So, yes, I do think Chris Jones will be the Klay Thompson. I do think there's a chance Chris Jones takes a snap in another jersey one day. It wouldn't astonish me, but there are a lot of players he needs to be ahead of the curve on as opposed to behind, and I think you've seen it with Snead to an extent, and you saw it with Hill. So I like the trajectory that we have with Brett Veach, but for your Warriors-Chiefs analogy, you always got to be refreshing, because when you're stagnating and plateauing, people are going past you.
And that's why, at least in this conversation, and I get it, I get why fans are always going to take the team side. When Patrick Mahomes is done playing for the Chiefs, you are still going to be cheering for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, your loyalty is always going to be to the team rather than the player. But haven't we seen this story play itself out enough where, all things considered, Klay probably wanted to stay in Golden State. Hey, this is the only team that I've played for. I've come up with these same other two guys. It is my dream to be able to retire along these two. I don't think the team wants him back anymore. And I think the Warriors are at the point where, all right, we can pay Klay for what he was, or we can start to be realistic about what he is. And Klay Thompson is probably, more than likely, cooked. You look at his last game in a uniform, and Rob, you and I have talked about it before. You never really get to ride it the way that you really want to. Everybody wants to go out on, you know, your own accord, and you go out still playing at a really high level. I mean, that last year for Kobe, the Lakers were terrible. As great as we think about Kobe's last game in the NBA, he did that on a team that was 30 games under 500 and basically just said, hey, for the last game, we'll let you take all the shots because that's why people are here. Klay Thompson's last game in a Golden State uniform, he played 32 minutes and didn't score. He didn't hit a single shot, not a one. I think Klay Thompson is one of the five greatest shooters that we have ever seen. You got Larry Bird, Ray Allen, Steph Curry. Klay Thompson is in that conversation as one of the greatest shooters we've ever seen. For him, his final game in a uniform to be in a postseason game, Rob, he took 10 shots. He missed all of them. He took six threes. He missed all of them. He was out there first team all cardio in his final game. He didn't even get to the free throw line in his final game. He was cooked. And I think the Warriors are just sitting there, hey, if we're going to try to win a championship and do right by Steph and try to give him the most help that we can in his final couple of years in the NBA, it cannot be with Klay Thompson as your running mate. I don't know what they do next. I don't know what move is out there, how they plan on getting better. But I think they realize, hey, if we're going to continue to do this with this big three, it's not going to work anymore. So obviously we're keeping Steph. I think as an organization, they need Draymond for all the other stuff that he does. They need Draymond for his toughness. He brings the ball up the floor. He sets up the offense. He's kind of that enforcer. I think they need Draymond. If Klay can't shoot it anymore, and he can't shoot it nearly the way that he could a couple of years ago, he obviously just doesn't have a whole lot of value to you if you're Golden State, so you had to make the tough decision of letting him go play for another team.
I would argue it's a tough decision. I'm sure Golden State fans today are very sad. All half dozen of them actually exist. The other swath of them pretend to be fans, but they don't really exist. But you know what? I think they made this move too late. Like, I have not seen the compensation. Like, I don't know what I don't know. I know that a player I don't remember is headed from Charlotte to Dallas. Like, there's some moving parts with it. I don't want to get too far in the weeds. But, Carrington, there was a time where trading Klay Thompson would have net you a king's ransom. That is not what happened today in the NBA. They're going to get a trade exception, a mid-level player. Just, they're going to get maybe a draft pick for Klay Thompson. They were late on the Klay Thompson trade. If you want like the honest breakdown, they were behind the curve. And yeah, it stinks. You got to make your decision on who your core is, and you got to be, you know, very, very aggressive with the rest. But when someone in that core, when someone in that group isn't up to snuff, you can't just be saying, well, you know, he's our guy. He's going to work it out. I do not believe this will happen, but I think you'll understand the analogy. If Travis Kelce next year looks mortal, and the year after that looks mortal again, and the Chiefs decide, we're going to cut you before the final year of your deal, Chiefs fans should take that as they did the right thing. You always need to be out ahead of the curve as opposed to behind it. And the fact that the trade for Klay Thompson netted the Warriors a trade exception, which a lot of people don't understand what that is, but it's not great value for a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame, is a sign that they waited too long. They were in the play-in game 2 years ago, and then this year they were, not that good either. It just, everyone knows the cachet of Golden State and the Splash Brothers. Do not be behind. Always be ahead, and you have to be doing that. That's why, back in March, I was all for trading L'Jarius Sneed. You got to make tough decisions. That's life. You've identified that, you know, Trent McDuffie is part of your core and L'Jarius Sneed wasn't. Get maximum value for L'Jarius Sneed. The Chiefs have done that. The Warriors didn't with Klay Thompson. I think they rode it out far too long.
I know we don't have a whole lot of time here. Let me get you out with this question. The excuses for Joel Embiid are over, right?
Yes.
They just gave Tyrese Maxey $200 million. They just got Paul George. Joel Embiid is the only MVP in the history of the NBA to never make it to the conference finals. There are no more excuses for your boy. Nah, there ain't no more excuses, man. They've given you a roster. They've tried to give you a lot of talent over the course of the last couple of years. They gave you Jimmy Butler. They gave you James Harden. They have given your boy Joel Embiid a lot of help over these last couple of years, a whole lot of help. And what have you done with it? You ain't done much with it. You're an MVP. People think you're one of the five best players in the NBA. I don't want to hear any more excuses for Joel Embiid. Stop it. No, it's over. Please stop it. It's done. Philadelphia needs to be a legitimate title contender and needs to make a very serious run. If you're going to put that pressure on Jason Tatum the way that you have, Robin, you put pressure on Jason Tatum. Almost all of these guys have at least, they've gone on their run. Joel Embiid has never gone on his run, not one single time since he has been in the NBA. So I just want to go and say that for you. Oh, Joel Embiid, nah, man. I don't want to hear it no more. You got two legitimate, you got two top 30 players on your team. I don't want to hear this we lost in the second round nonsense from him anymore. I need to see a much better version of Joel Embiid than we've seen. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to talking about the Kansas City Royals. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 610 Sports Radio, home of the hallowed title, Friend of the Show.
I'm very happy to be a friend of the show. It's always good to talk to you, man.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. So today we have no Royals game. The Royals are off today. A major reason why they're off today is the Truman Sports Complex is in use because United States men's soccer is in town. They're playing Uruguay later today, 8 o'clock, Arrowhead, a little World Cup tune-up for the guys. What happens after, this is a genuine question, what happens after Copa America? Like, are they going to play again? Are there other World Cup tune-ups? We got a long time until we get to the World Cup. What's next for USA after they get eliminated from pool play?
There will be a wave of international friendlies because they already qualified for the World Cup in 26.
Because they're hosting. They're one of the host teams. So
they won't have a qualification phase, but I assume they will load their schedule with other teams. Probably Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But other teams across the way to get some games in before the, you know, big tournament.
Is there ever a time, and this is, again, I'm just asking because I don't know. Is there a time where they're like, hey, we want to play France? Is there a time where they're like, oh, we want to play England? We want to play Brazil? Like, to to be the best, we want to play the best and we want to really challenge ourselves? Or are they just going to keep playing smaller countries? Like, at some point, does the United States in soccer, do they try to play, you know, top flight teams, or are they always just going to play mid majors?
I mean, I would like to see them play more top flight teams, but their international friendly schedule, I pulled it up for the September window, is Canada, New Zealand, and Panama.
Okay. So they're going to keep playing MAC schools.
They're going to.
They don't want any smoke with the SEC. They don't want to play any SEC team, no Big Ten team. They're going to keep playing schools from the MEAC and the Sun Belt. That's their plan.
They
got to
get some cupcakes on the schedule. That's the plan.
I get it. It's called friendly, international friendly. There ain't nothing friendly about getting your ass whooped. So I understand. I get it. Hey, let's keep beating up on this small country that might not qualify for the World Cup because we need to feel better. No, that makes sense. Oh, I get it. I completely understand. I apologize to the United States. All right, I do have two things, and then we'll move on from United States soccer. The first thing, I was really thinking this. Is this how you would rank Team USA's in terms of popularity? Number one, gymnastics team. Gymnastics is the most popular Team USA that we have every year. When the Olympics are on and they're telling you that the floor exercise is about to happen, or the rings, or the balance beam, America is watching it. Men, women, kids. Some of our favorite Olympic memories are wrapped around the women's gymnastics team. I think that is the most popular Team USA that we have. Is number two soccer? Like, I'm trying to think of what the number two would be. Maybe you would argue swimming, but it feels like it's more wrapped up into one individual person. Like, hey, I really want to see Michael Phelps, or on the ladies' side, I want to see Katie Ledecky. Is there another team from a team aspect, not just like an individual? Like, hey, I want to see Michael Johnson run for the 200 meters, or as a team, outside of the gymnastics team, is there another Team USA that's more popular than the American soccer team? Because from a ratings perspective, I mean, once the World Cup gets here and Team USA play, they are going to get NFL playoff numbers once it's on. They're going to get 25, 30 million people to watch them in the World Cup the next time that it's here. Whenever they have a game, like, if they show that they are good by just a little bit, they get 18, 20 million people to show up. If at any point Team USA gets really good and they really got a chance to compete and they really got a chance to advance in the World Cup, they will start to get serious playoff numbers. I mean, like AFC Championship, NFC Championship game numbers if they made a real run at a World Cup. Is that how you would rank it, Rob? You got gymnastics one and then soccer's two?
Are we counting both men and women's as two? Because
yeah.
I would say I think the women's team is more popular than the men's team.
Now, interesting.
I think this upcoming World Cup rotation, World Cup loop is going to change things here.
Really quick, let me just ask this question about the women's soccer team. Now, I am a casual observer here. It didn't really seem like people liked the last women's soccer team. Now, a lot of that had nothing to do with soccer, but I can't ever think of a men's soccer player that has been polarizing in the way that Megan Rapinoe was the last time. People seemed happy that the soccer team had lost the last time. Go woke, go broke. That's what people were saying about the last women's soccer team. Maybe that was the case in 2004. People felt that way about women's soccer ahead of men's soccer. I don't know if you could say that in 2021, the women's team was more popular than the men's team. They were way more polarizing than I can remember the men's soccer team ever being.
That's probably true. The last World Cup cycle may have skewered it. And this upcoming World Cup cycle for the men it's going to be on home turf. So there is an element of things have pivoted a little bit back and forth. But I just think on the whole, the women's team tends to be more popular than the men's team. I also think that's because, and let's be honest, Carrington, it's the same reason where if me and you start naming teams that have a bunch of bandwagon fans in the world, it's because they win. The women's team wins all the time. Like, their last World Cup loss was an outlier because we're so used to doing all the winning. I think the U.S. women's team became more popular because you get all the glory of being a United States fan, but then you get an extra dollop of happiness because you never watch your team lose. So the men's team, as you've laid out, loses quite often, and fans tend to gravitate toward the winning because it's a better time.
Someone on the text line says, "C-Dot, I know it's a stretch, but I truly believe that if the men's national team was in a World Cup final, it would be the largest television audience of all time." I don't think it would be that big.
Ooh, I don't know that. I think it would be. I think it would, if it was in a regular time window. Like, let's say it was last World Cup, they were in Qatar, however it's pronounced, and that game was at 9 a.m. I think a 9 a.m. game where it's like, hey, 10 a.m. in the East, I think you would see one of the largest. But if it's like, oh, the World Cup's in Korea and the final's at 4 in the morning, that might be a little bit different. But if it's at a normal hour, I think you're going to see, if the U.S. in it, I think you will see insane numbers.
I think and it's crazy to say this, I think we're now underrating how many people watch the Super Bowl. Last year's Super Bowl got 123 million people to watch it. We think that's what Team USA would do if they were in the World Cup final. I'm not saying they wouldn't get a lot of people. I think they would probably get closer to like 60 to 75 million, somewhere in that range. Like, if they got to that point, it would probably do one of the presidential debates. It would probably do what that does. What did the last debate do? Did 50 million, then they got 30 million on streaming? I could see it doing something like that.
How much that 140 million for the Super Bowl, is that all national audience and not international?
Because, yeah, that was in America. They got 123 million people to watch the last Super Bowl. I don't know if soccer's doing that number. That is a ridiculous number.
I think it's probably in between what me and you think, if we're being honest. I think it probably beats the debate, and I think it pushes toward the Super Bowl, but 140 is just a stupid number. But much like the Super Bowl, the World Cup final is a standalone event. Yeah. Like, it would be in the summer, which, no offense to Royals baseball or no offense to the Current or Sporting or whatever else happening in the summer, it's kind of a dead period in sports. Like, we joke about in the office, like, July is kind of, it's a little bit dry for topics. Like, it would be in a standalone window similar to the Super Bowl. I could see it maybe doing 70, 80, 90, or even 100. 140, now that I hear that number, is absolutely absurd.
A lot of people watching one thing on TV.
What did the college football national title do? Now, that's a little bit difference. ESPN, not
regular. Yeah, it's not going to be the number that you think it is. Hold on, let me pull it up here.
Because I would say the World Cup would be the biggest non-Super Bowl event ever on television.
25 million people watched the last college football championship game.
It would dwarf that.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy to say, we all know how popular the NFL is. When you think of the college football national championship game got 25 million, and six times the amount of people watch the Super Bowl, just goes to show you. The NFL is just, it is a completely different level. It is a completely different beast when you get 25 million people. That's why I think the AFC Championship game, the NFC Championship game, that's probably a realistic number for what they're going to get. Like, last year for the AFC Championship game, they got 55 million people to watch it on television. So half, a little less than half the amount of people that watch the Super Bowl watch the AFC Championship game. It is just such an event once you get to the Super Bowl that it just completely changes things. I do have this question about soccer. What do you want soccer in America to be as a fan? We're joking about it, but Team USA soccer is your favorite sport. Like, if I ask you about, you know, a different team, like, I cheer for Missouri. Hey, what do you want Missouri basketball to be? I want them to consistently make the NCAA tournament, and I want them to get to the point where once every 4 or once every 5 years, you really got a shot to do something special. I think that's a realistic, obtainable goal for Missouri basketball to be. Be a team that every year has a chance to make the tournament, and once every recruiting cycle, you got a chance to do something really special if things can break right for you. What do you want Team USA soccer to be? Because I will joke about this. I feel like we have been told for the last 25 years, hey, man, it's on the way, it's on the way. I don't really feel like they're on the way. They've never really made a serious run where you thought, hey, they could really win this thing. They could get to the Elite Eight. They could get to the Final Four. They're a real contender in this tournament. It's just that more people like and enjoy soccer than they did when we were kids. But I'm not really sure how advanced Team USA is in this conversation.
So I looked it up because I wanted to make sure I got this right. The best ever finish the United States has had is they made a semifinal. Now, it was the 1930 World Cup, so it wasn't exactly what the World Cup is today. But that's what I think the goal should be. They too often in the World Cup, and I know we're talking World Cup, not Copa America, but they too
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. So today we have no Royals game. The Royals are off today. A major reason why they're off today is the Truman Sports Complex is in use because United States men's soccer is in town. They're playing Uruguay later today, 8 o'clock, Arrowhead, a little World Cup tune-up for the guys. What happens after, this is a genuine question, what happens after Copa America? Like, are they going to play again? Are there other World Cup tune-ups? We got a long time until we get to the World Cup. What's next for USA after they get eliminated from pool play?
There will be a wave of international friendlies because they already qualified for the World Cup in 26.
Because they're hosting. One of the host teams. So
they won't have a qualification phase, but I assume they will load their schedule with other teams.
Mexico, for sure.
But other teams across the way to get some games in before the, you know, big tournament.
Is there ever a time, and this is, again, I'm just asking because I don't know, is there a time where they're like, hey, we want to play France? Is there a time where they're like, oh, we want to play England? We want to play Brazil? Like, to be the best, we want to play the best, and we want to really challenge ourselves, or are they just going to keep playing smaller countries? Like, at some point, does the United States in soccer, do they try to play, you know, top flight teams, or are they always just going to play mid majors?
I mean, I would like to see them play more top flight teams, but their international friendly schedule, I pulled it up for the September window, is Canada, New Zealand, and Panama.
Okay. So they're going to keep playing MAC schools.
They're going to.
They don't want any smoke with the SEC. They don't want to play any SEC team, no Big Ten team. They're going to keep playing schools from the MEAC and the Sun Belt. That's their plan.
They
got to
get some cupcakes on the schedule.
I get it. I get it. It's called friendly, international friendly. There ain't nothing friendly about getting your ass whooped. So I understand. I get it. Hey, let's keep beating up on this small country that might not qualify for the World Cup because we need to feel better. No, that makes sense. Oh, I get it. I completely understand. I apologize to the United States. All right, I do have two things, and then we'll move on from United States soccer. The first thing, I was really thinking this. Is this how you would rank Team USA's in terms of popularity? Number one, gymnastics team. Gymnastics is the most popular Team USA that we have every year. When the Olympics are on and they're telling you that the floor exercise is about to happen or the rings or the balance beam, America is watching it. Men, women, kids. Some of our favorite Olympic memories are wrapped around the women's gymnastics team. I think that is the most popular Team USA that we have. Is number two soccer? Like, I'm trying to think of what the number two would be. Maybe you would argue swimming, but it feels like it's more wrapped up into one individual person. Like, hey, I really want to see Michael Phelps, or on the ladies' side, I want to see Katie Ledecky. Is there another team from a team aspect, not just like an individual, like, hey, I want to see Michael Johnson run for the 200 meters, or as a team? Outside of the gymnastics team, is there another Team USA that's more popular than the American soccer team? Because from a ratings perspective, I mean, once the World Cup gets here and Team USA play, they are going to get NFL playoff numbers once it's on. They're going to get 25, 30 million people to watch them in the World Cup the next time that it's here. Whenever they have a game, like, if they show that they are good by just a little bit, they get 18, 20 million people to show up. If at any point Team USA gets really good and they really got a chance to compete and they really got a chance to advance in the World Cup, they will start to get serious playoff numbers. I mean, like AFC Championship, NFC Championship game numbers if they made a real run at a World Cup. Is that how you would rank it, Rob? You got gymnastics one and then soccer's two?
Are we counting both men and women's as two? Because
yeah.
I would say I think the women's team is more popular than the men's team.
Now, interesting.
I think this upcoming World Cup rotation, World Cup loop is going to change things here.
Really quick, let me just ask this question about the women's soccer team. Now, I am a casual observer here. it didn't really seem like people liked the last women's soccer team. Now, a lot of that had nothing to do with soccer, but I can't ever think of a men's soccer player that has been polarizing in the way that Megan Rapinoe was the last time. People seemed happy that the soccer team had lost the last time. Go woke, go broke. That's what people were saying about the last women's soccer team. Maybe that was the case in 2004. People felt that way about women's soccer ahead of men's soccer. I don't know if you could say that in 2021, the women's team was more popular than the men's team. They were way more polarizing than I can remember the men's soccer team ever being.
That's probably true. The last World Cup cycle may have skewered it. And this upcoming World Cup cycle for the men is... it's going to be on home turf. So there is an element of things have pivoted a little bit back and forth. But I just think on the whole, the women's team tends to be more popular than the men's team. I also think that's because, and let's be honest, Carrington, it's the same reason where if me and you start naming teams that have a bunch of bandwagon fans in the world, it's because they win. The women's team wins all the time. Like, their last World Cup loss was an outlier because we're so used to doing all the winning. I think the U.S. women's team became more popular because you get all the glory of being a United States fan, but then you get an extra dollop of happiness because you never watch your team lose. So the men's team, as you've laid out, loses quite often, and fans tend to gravitate toward the winning because it's a better time.
Someone on the text line says, "CDOT, I know it's a stretch, but I truly believe that if the men's national team was in a World Cup final, it would be the largest television audience of all time." I don't think it would be that big.
Ooh, I don't know that. I think it would be. I think it would, if it was in a regular time window. Like, let's say it was last World Cup, they were in Qatar, however it's pronounced, and that game was at 9 a.m. I think a 9 a.m. game where it's like, hey, 10 a.m. in the East, I think you would see one of the largest. But if it's like, oh, the World Cup's in Korea and the final's at 4 in the morning, that might be a little bit different. But if it's at a normal hour, I think you're going to see, if the U.S. in it, I think you will see insane numbers.
I think and it's crazy to say this, I think we're now underrating how many people watch the Super Bowl. Last year's Super Bowl got 123 million people to watch it. We think that's what Team USA would do if they were in the World Cup final. I'm not saying they wouldn't get a lot of people. I think they would probably get closer to like 60 to 75 million, somewhere in that range. Like, if they got to that point, it would probably do one of the presidential debates. It would probably do what that does. What did the last debate do? Did 50 million, then they got 30 million on streaming? I could see it doing something like that.
How much that 140 million for the Super Bowl, is that all national audience and not international?
Because, yeah, that was in America. They got 123 million people to watch the last Super Bowl. I don't know if soccer's doing that number. That is a ridiculous number.
I think it's probably in between what me and you think, if we're being honest. I think it probably beats the debate, and I think it pushes toward the Super Bowl, but 140 is just a stupid number. But much like the Super Bowl, the World Cup final is a standalone event. Yeah. Like, it would be in the summer, which, no offense to Royals baseball or no offense to the Current or Sporting or whatever else happening in the summer, it's kind of a dead period in sports. Like, we joke about in the office, like, July is kind of, it's a little bit dry for topics. Like, it would be in a standalone window similar to the Super Bowl. I could see it maybe doing 70, 80, 90, or even 100. 140, now that I hear that number, is absolutely absurd.
A lot of people watching one thing on television.
What did the college football national title do? Now that's a little bit different. ESPN, not
regular. It's not going to be the number that you think it is. Hold on, let me pull it up here.
Because I would say the World Cup would be the biggest non-Super Bowl event ever on television.
25 million people watched the last college football championship game.
It would dwarf
that. That's what I'm saying. It's crazy to say we all know how popular the NFL is. When you think of the college football national championship game got 25 million, and six times the amount of people watch the Super Bowl, just goes to show you. The NFL is just, it is a completely different level. It is a completely different beast when you get 25 million people. That's why I think the AFC Championship game, the NFC Championship game, that's probably a realistic number for what they're going to get. Like, last year for the AFC Championship game, they got 55 million people to watch it on television. So half, a little less than half the amount of people that watch the Super Bowl watch the AFC Championship game. It is just such an event once you get to the Super Bowl that it just completely changes things. I do have this question about soccer. What do you want soccer in America to be as a fan? We're joking about it, but Team USA Soccer is your favorite sport. Like if I ask you about, you know, a different team, like I cheer for Missouri. Hey, what do you want Missouri basketball to be? I want them to consistently make the NCAA tournament, and I want them to get to the point where once every 4 or once every 5 years, you really got a shot to do something special. I think that's a realistic, obtainable goal for Missouri basketball to be. Be a team that every year has a chance to make the tournament, and once every recruiting cycle, you got a chance to do something really special if things can break right for you. What do you want Team USA Soccer to be? Because I will joke about this. I feel like we have been told for the last 25 years, hey, man, it's on the way, it's on the way. I don't really feel like they're on the way. They've never really made a serious run where you thought, hey, they could really win this thing. They could get to the Elite Eight. They could get to the Final Four. They're a real contender in this tournament. It's just that more people like and enjoy soccer than they did when we were kids. But I'm not really sure how advanced Team USA is in this conversation.
So I looked it up because I wanted to make sure I got this right. The best ever finish the United States has had is they made a semifinal. Now, it was the 1930 World Cup, so it wasn't exactly what the World Cup is today. But that's what I think the goal should be. They too often in the World Cup, and I know we're talking World Cup, not Copa America, but they too often in these tournaments are going into the third game and U.S. soccer fans are chewing on their fingernails. Are they going to get through? Are they going to get through? Are they going to get through? Then they either do or don't. And if they do, it's the round of 16. It's 4 days of buzz. Hey, can they do this? They're playing a superior nation. Maybe if everything breaks right, they can get it. Let's just see what happens. And then they lose. And everyone's like, well, you know, they made it out of group play. So that's happy times. Everyone's having a good time. I think an honest, if we're fair assessment is, the goal should be to make the semifinal. Like, if we look at last year's World Cup, the United States won their group. Woohoo! They then go to the round of 16 where they're drubbed by the Netherlands.
Smoked.
3-1, never in the game. If they had beaten the Netherlands, they were in the quarterfinals going to take on Argentina. They were probably going to lose to Argentina. The Netherlands is a good country. They lost to Argentina. But you know what? There is no reason why, if the draw doesn't break right, you should be saying, hey, we can beat two prestigious countries and we can make a World Cup semifinal. We saw Iceland a few years ago make a quarterfinal. There's no reason you can't be aiming for a semifinal. It's just basically, can you win two knockout round and then you bump into Brazil, then you bump into Spain, and then an Argentina gets you. But the semifinal should be the goal. I'd love a World Cup final. I'd love to be seeing Christian Pulisic or whoever hoist the trophy. Obviously, that's the dream. The same way for your Missouri thing, you want to see them win a title, but let's be honest about what happens first. Get to a semifinal. Get past the round of 16. Win a quarterfinal match. Do something impressive to where people are like, oh, and they can feel that, hey, all this building we've been talking about in America, it's come to fruition a little bit.
I just want Missouri to get to the Final Four at one point, you know? I just want them to get to the Final Four. I wouldn't mind this year if they made the college football playoff, hosted a game, and then won that game. You know, can they beat Penn State at home this year? Yeah, I think they could. That's all I really want. You know, that's the goal that I have. That's my hope and dream that I just want them to do that. You know, why can't I get that? If you're a Cubs fan, you got to see your team win a World Series at one point. You know, you got to see your team win. You got to see your team win. If you're a Red Sox fan, you got to see him win. You're telling me that before I leave this earth, I just can't see Missouri get the right draw and then they can't make the Final Four. That's you know, I that's what I want from me.
To your Missouri analogy, that's exactly how I feel about the United States. Like, for Missouri to make a Final Four, they probably have to be a high-ranked seed, like well-ranked, and they're probably going to have to win two really tough games. Let's just make them a two seed in this hypothetical for the sake of the conversation. They beat a 15, they beat a 7. Well, good job. You're going to have to beat a 3 seed. That's going to be a good team. And you have to beat the team on the other side of the bracket, and that's going to be a good team. It's not some rummy, some pushover. You're not going to run into, you know, what was that, a 16 seed that won that came all the way through. That's not happening. That's how I feel with the United States. Hey, get out of your group. Beat in the round of 16, beat a team you should probably beat. And then go beat one really difficult team. Go shine. Go beat a France. Go beat a, you know, Brazil, and now you're in the semifinals, and I would be beyond happy despite the fact it's not a trophy. That's the ultimate goal as a United States soccer fan.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to talking about the Kansas City Royals. The Royals had a great weekend. 1-3 out of 4. Bo Jackson was here. The weather held up for the most part. A great weekend for the Kansas City Royals. We'll get to it coming up at the top of the hour. And if you missed it, we'll play the best of our conversation with Denny Matthews. Denny was great today. I really want you guys to hear what Denny had to say. Today was conference realignment day. If you missed it, all of the changes have now happened in college football. Oklahoma's in the SEC. Texas is in the SEC. Oregon is in the Big Ten. Washington is in the Big Ten. Arizona is in the Big 12. None of it makes sense. Is it possible that we can just hit reset and can just everybody calm down a little bit? I get it. You want to pursue more money. You want more opportunities. Is college football really going to be better because of all of these changes? Is college football really better now that USC and Penn State are in the exact same league? I just feel like there should have been some kind of protection, some kind of safeguard, and that maybe the powers that be just could have sat down and asked everybody, hey, is this really in our best interest? Is this what is best for the student athlete? We haven't even begun to have the conversation about what this means for literally any other sport. This only benefits you if you are a television executive that makes money off college football. That is the only people that are benefited by all of the changes that we have seen in the last 3 years of college football. You cannot tell me it is better for college basketball that Yukers are in the same league now. It cannot be the best thing for college basketball. And maybe we just don't care about it anymore. Like, we have determined that college athletics, its number one purpose is to make the football team and football product as strong as it can possibly be. And we do not care about strengthening any other kind of sport that college kids play. Not basketball, not soccer, not hockey, not any of the other college sports. How's our college football team doing? But why have we done all of this? Why are Washington and Washington State not in the same league? What league is Washington State even in? What conference is Oregon State in? What are they planning on doing this upcoming season? Who are they playing? Who are they playing? Did you guys know that Stanford is in the ACC? I'm serious. How is Stanford in the ACC now? You're telling me Stanford and Duke are in the same conference? How can Stanford be in the Atlantic Coast Conference? Now, I know it took me a long time to graduate college, and I couldn't have went to Stanford. But, gee, that makes no sense. You're telling me Cal's in the ACC? That's what you're telling me, Rob? That's what happened today? Cal? Can we just go back? Can we just go back in time? I don't care. At this point, I don't care whose fault it is. Oklahoma's fault, Texas' fault, Missouri's fault. I don't care whose fault it is anymore. I really don't. Nebraska, A&M, stop it. Can we just go back and we just reset this thing and think, man, you know what? It wasn't that bad. Hey, the West Coast had their conference. The South had their conference. The Midwest had their conference. The Northeast had their conference. It was not that bad. Greed usually corrupts and destroys. And in a lot of ways, it's destroyed college athletics. It certainly has destroyed it if you play anything else other than college football. Maybe it won't be that bad in college football, right? We're going to get games that we never would have got. Ohio State's going to go on the road and play Oregon in a college football game. And it'll be great. People will watch it. People will travel. It'll do really well on television. What about when Oregon plays Ohio State in basketball? What about when they play each other in baseball? We just don't care about any of those sports, too. It just doesn't seem like it was in the best interest of the students. And it's funny for an entity that told us for the longest time that there's a reason it's called student athlete because the student comes first. That was not factored into any of the decisions that have been made over the last couple of years when talking about college athletics. Coming up on the other side, let's get back to the Kansas City Royals that had one of the best weekends that they've had in quite some time. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here, Sir Drive.